Okay.
Boom. And we are in. I have the incredible, the wonderful, the talented, the persistent. Tasha Riley.
Hi. Intro.
How's life, man?
Life is fantastic. I'm going to start with that. We're trying to be like more enthusiastic about the life and times and the processes, and it's good. I mean, there are things, you know, we're obviously working through very difficult times right now in the world. Mm-hmm. So there is that. There's the outer shell of the world. Then there's like the more intimate shell of our world.
Yeah, the performer's world. Yeah, yeah. It puts it into perspective when you think of the world's problems, yeah. Right? And you go, "Oh, we're all right," but yeah. You know, I'll get on with it.
No, they're fine. Yeah, but, my world is keeping it. Yeah.
So for a bit of a background intro for people who don't know you, because maybe there are some people that don't, which would kind of blow my mind if they don't know you, but. I guess we're kind of both from a generation where we weren't introduced as into social media culture. You know, your rise into breaking into the dance industry and kind of becoming a household name to dancers wasn't in a generation of Instagram and stuff. It was like YouTube-y kind of time, right? Where we didn't, yeah. I guess, maybe follow a specific person. We just saw videos.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I remember the first time I ever saw you dance was in a Bobby Newbury video.
Bobby Newbury's texting me right now.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I
remember the first time I saw you dance, Sean Niles showed me you, and it was you in Bobby Newbury's class, and you changed the combo and you did it and you went to the floor instead. And I was like,
It's Cisco.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah. Who is this bitch? Let's go. Just making a choice for class. And I guess that's what kind of exposed me to like you. And then I was kind of educated of who you were within the dance world via Sean Niles. And he would show me like videos of you dancing with Janet and stuff like that. And I'd be like, yo, she's dope. And he'd be like, yeah, she was 17. I was like, what? Like, well, she was super young.
Yeah.
So you've kind of been in the game for a very long time now. Without making that mean in your old, but
makes me old. But I still get your, are you a 19? Are you 19, 20, 21? I still get that. So as long as I keep hearing that, I'm good.
Yeah. But, So you've been in the industry for a very long time. And you know, very recently you've become more of a voice for the industry as opposed to just an artist within it or a creative within it. You know, you kind of took on the challenge of fighting for dancers' pay over multiple different projects and raising awareness of what's right and wrong. What's this kind of experience been like for you?
Well, it's been a learning experience, obviously, because there's nobody that has really done this before, like, especially on the social media tip. So there's not really an example I can look at and say, okay, these are the steps you take, or I can counsel with this person to see what steps I take. You know, even some of the organizations that we know and we grew up knowing, being in a position to help and fight, they're not in that position anymore. And they have, Earth had been coming to visit me, sorry. Mm-hmm. They're not in that position now. So I am in this space, not just navigating for my personal life, but I'm also navigating for other people's lives that will have an effect before, after me. Had an effect before me and have the effect after me. And then currently, like, and I feel like I've been advocating for a while. Like, I haven't been advocating for like just this past year. Mm. Like, I've been advocating on jobs, like actually the job that we were on together, I advocated on that job. And, I feel like since like maybe 2011, 2012, like really like 3 or 4 years into my career, I've taken this seat where I've almost become that prima donna or that diva, or that person that, you know, what is this bird trying to say to me? I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
It's like literally like at my door, like, yeah. babe.
I've got a message. Yeah.
I have a message in my mouth.
He's got a message in his mouth.
But yeah, like, I think that over the years, I've become this prima donna or this diva character in the way of I had that example from Janet. And then as I started to see things in different parts of the industry, whether it was a tour performance or artist performance, award show kind of thing, or industrial. I had done motion capture at that point. I've done screen tests at that point. I've done some performance artwork like at that point. So I was already like kind of well-versed in the spectrum of dance art. And I didn't like what I felt. And that's kind of what drove me. And leading up to this, like, I had a moment like back then before like Instagram was popping, where I merged, or it bled together my love for dance and the dance industry, and the questions, the curiosity, the concern for the dance industry. They like started to bleed together so much that I thought it was just like, I don't want to dance anymore. And that's when I got into like DJing, and I got heavier into my songwriting. I started, you know, like dabbling into other businesses, more learning about more other businesses. And the more I learned, the more I was like, oh, I'm not crazy. Oh, okay. Well, I am crazy, but
you're not imagining that we're in a shit scenario.
Yeah. We are in a shit scenario.
Yeah, it's real.
We are in a shit scenario. So it's like, yeah. So after that, that was cool, and came back doing more stuff, working more heavy with like Paris and, you know, Paris, like literally like working so much for her. I was still doing work with Brian. I was still doing on and off work with Jaquel. And I just started speaking more so. And I think I got that from like some of the hard-headed outspoken people that I trained with alongside of and were further along in their journeys, like Aisha Francis, Anthony Garza, Ava Bernstein. Like, some of these people were in my life and in some of the jobs that I was doing, and I would see what they would do. And I'd just be like, all right. Or just taking notes from Brian, just because like, that's Liberace dance. Like, they don't make them like that anymore, you know?
They sure don't.
To see him in the standard that he strives for, it's like, I trained under him, I trained under Mia, and I trained under Wade, and I trained under Travis, like all of them. And more than that, like, I've had an extensive amount of training where I've seen multiple examples of people putting their foot down, of people having their standards raised to a higher level. And I began to think, you don't have to be a choreographer in order to have these things or want these things or desire these things, because we're just as much the choreographer as the choreographer. Mm-hmm. We're part of that. Without us, the choreographer cannot make what he needs to make for the recording artist. Without the recording artist, there's no choreographer. But without the choreographer, there may not be a persona for that recording artist or development for that recording artist. And without the dance artist, there may not be an extension or an expansion of that, which means all those recording artists that you see out there would start to look the same, the exact same. We're the ones that help with the artist development side of it to expand that visual to be something deeper than what it actually is.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed it. My dog's trying to get my attention.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Like, you got the dog, I got the bird.
It's the way we go. home podcast life.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what tripped me out. And then, you know, social media born and living and sustaining. And I thought, you know, after getting into the pandemic, I was seeing a lot of people stand up on other injustices and seeing them win those battles through social media. Mm. And I was like,
this is the way in.
This is it.
Because you say you've been like doing it for a while. It's like, I know I worked with you, so I saw you fighting corners and battles, but you know, it was never on like a platform where everyone could see it. But right. Do you think, you know, your approach by taking it to Instagram kind of not outing people for you know, not making the right choices on behalf of dancers, but do you feel like it's had a negative effect on you, although it's had a positive reaction is in results, because you know, you've made a change, you've made difference, you've done stuff which like people like SAG or Dancers Alliance or whatever have been trying to do for ages, and now you've taken it like to social media, you know. But do you feel like you've received backlash at all from it? Because like when I go through the comments, sometimes some of the things I see people saying to you, I'm like, yo, can you not see that? Like, you're fighting the cause for like the people who are saying negative things to you. I'm like, you're fighting for them to earn more money. Like, you're fighting for them to be treated correctly. Like, I never understand the approach for people.
You know what's interesting? I'm in a time right now where the backlash I'm okay with. Mm. What I'm not okay with is you being silent. Mm. That actually hurts me more. I actually had to let go of like a lot of people that were friends of mine, because honestly, if you're this close to me and you're in the dance art world and you're not doing something about it, then we don't have the same values. Mm. We don't.
Is that what you mean by being silent? Just like sitting by and watching this happen without kind of like supporting the cause, not even supporting you. Cause you know, although it's supporting you cause you're being the voice, it's supporting the cause. It's supporting their own careers. It's supporting their own industry.
Yeah. It's that direct exchange of like, I am helping you. I'm helping you and you're seeing that I'm helping you. And you continue to complain or bring up things to me, and I'm giving you advice on how to, you know, solve this problem, and then you're just literally not doing it. Mm. So it's either you're afraid, which is quite fine, or you don't agree with the approach that I'm doing, which is quite fine. But the fact that this is not really being communicated directly, I'm not okay with, you know? And that's my thing. Like, I learned through a friendship that I no longer have, how to take care of me in this advocacy, because I need people constantly pouring into me. That's what I figured out I was missing. And I had to take so many breaks, because it's funny. It's like, you're a social media advocate, you hate social media.
Yeah.
How are we going to do it? When I first started like the resurgence of the dance community, it was for like a grassroots organization for Dancers Alliance. And at that time I was contacting from 65 to 125 people a day. So whenever somebody would reach out, I'd be up in those DMs responding back to them, and not like, hey, thank you. Like, that's it. You know, mm-hmm. like, no, like, what do you need? Where are you from? Like, mm-hmm. have voice note conversations with people like 100 times a day. Mm. And then still continuing to run my business, because social media advocacy is not what I do. That's my purpose work, or my, you know, my service mm-hmm. to my community. But outside of my service to my community, I have a business.
And a life. Like
a life. Yeah. A personal life. And I have a business, and I have, you know, projects that are always on the table. I am a project juggler. So I'm one of those people that likes to take on multiple projects at a time. Because I don't like to stand still. I think that's like, I guess that's something I picked up from like working in entertainment or being part of a family of entertainment is I cannot stand still.
Yeah, doing the same shit. Just the same you're so thing. Bland.
I cannot do that. Unless there's pizza. But yeah, I mean, that's help me understand and realize you've got to take care of yourself because you're hearing these stories and you're empathic to these stories or you're sympathetic to these stories. And then it's taking from you because you're giving to those people. And what you need is are people that are going to pour back into you and affirm your message. And it's not, I'm not going to say it's a selfless thing that I'm doing because there is a point in time where I also have to be selfish where to get enough power and energy in order to do that. So, you know, I am human. I am created to be a, like a God in the image of God, but it's a path and journey that I'm still working towards and battling mental health. Like that is that journey breaking at the same time is really understanding, holy crap, I have alters. And that same in the same dimension, in that same breath, people are discovering that there is a full spectrum to themselves. And so that gives me a little bit more comfort in knowing that like this is something that everybody deals with in certain levels, but when mine hits an extreme, I dissociate, I forget things, I do this, and I get triggered. I back away, I'm reclusive for trauma reasons. So I just, yeah, needless to say, it's, I have to really take care of myself. And when I do hear the backlash, my thing is, I'm doing this, I'm making a decision to go on social media because I know that the whole entire dance industry is not on the same page. We don't talk with each other. There's nothing mainstream that can drive the device of our culture becoming mainstream and being more talked about amongst other stars that are on tour with these other recording artists or artist collaborators. And even just like, you know, the concert world, we got the concert world, we got the Broadway world, theater world, we got the touring theater world, we've got the live performance world of the tours and the music videos. And we have that life, we have the industrial life, we have motion capture background, we have the TV and film, straight up TV and film.
And they're all treated so differently.
So differently.
They're paid so differently. Like
different perks, different ups and downs, different standards, different oppression. Tactics, oppressive tactics or methods that are used. And yeah, I mean, when I decided, okay, I want to be a global platform. So I have to make certain decisions that think big picture and not just a little tiny city over here, you know? So if I make a decision to share something generally, I share something generally. I've observed other collectives and organizations bringing up certain topics and they do it like infographs. It gets no playtime. It gets no engagement. It gets no visibility. You got 4 or 5 likes, maybe 75 likes tops. And they're all coming from one region and one time period, right, of the day. So I can't do that. Then I could call out somebody like really like just start talking smack.
Yeah, making unnecessary like hip hop beef.
Unnecessary noise.
Hip hop beef.
Hip hop beef. That's hot.
That's what 50 Cent used to do.
Yes.
You know, just cause beef to gain traction. Like he's a gangster.
But it's like that's not my character. But I think massaging both of these techniques and also finding a composed way to say it and organize the information, that's when I hit big. And then giving it some sort of shock value to what I'm trying to say. The shock value of dance industry horror stories. First of all, you're like, what the heck is that? Then you see the name Seven Streeter, or you see the name J-Lo, or you see the name Kanye, or you see the name Super Bowl. And then you're like, now I gotta know what happened that was so horrific. And, you know, using that kind of algorithm juice, that's what got the attention. And I think before that, it was the idea that, you know, for me, because I've been in all of these circuits, I've gotten a chance to know the impactors or influencers of each of those circuits. So there is a Desmond Richardson that knows me, but there's also a Toby Dideran that knows me. And there's also, you know, an Ariana DeBose that knows me. Mm. And then there's also a, you know, a Rhapsody James that knows me. And they are in completely different parts of the entertainment industry, you know? So I think that's kind of what helps. It's like, who said this? John Maxwell, I think, said, if you want to influence like the masses, you have to learn how to influence the influencers. Mm. Impact the influencers, and the influencers will spread it to the masses. That's been the method, you know? So if John Maxwell didn't say, I got
something. It works. So you said just then, like, you know, you were speaking to people from all over the place, voice noting them about their issues, voice noting things that were like what they've experienced. Like, obviously you don't have to go into super duper detail, but like, what kind of things are people reaching out for help for or advice for? Is it just your generic, like, I haven't been paid on time? Or like, I wonder how deep problems within the dance industry are actually rooted, or the entertainment industry are actually rooted. Like, what kind of things were coming out to you? Were there anything that took you by surprise?
Couple. One was really shocking, and it had to do with, you know, a huge company, a huge telecommunications company, and SAG-AFTRA, and with them getting away with stopping payment on certain residuals. This company has been known to do this, and SAG-AFTRA has been known. Knows that they've been known to do this on their watch, where they will say in the contract, you know, and promise some residuals, and then go back a few months later and amend the contract so that they, like, in terms of the class level that they're in. So, like, say you get signed on for a movie, right? Mm-hmm. You're a principal performer, and that's your title. And you're slotted to do, you know, four different scenes, right? You do those four scenes, but you get no camera time. So then these companies are thinking, well, he has no camera time. We should bump him down a class, because the person that's really getting the camera time is so-and-so. So let's keep these four principal performers at the principal performer residual bracket. And let's take these performers that aren't really seen at all. You can't really see them on camera. Mm. And let's bump them down a couple of residual groups. Mm. And they've been getting away with that.
After already agreeing on a negotiation.
Like, just because after the fact they saw on TV, you didn't make the screen time that should have existed for you as a principal performer and a principal performer group.
Because that's what you've agreed to, and that's what we've agreed to. And now after the math, the final edit doesn't work out. So we don't pay you what we said we were going to pay you, because it's not needed. Needed. In air quotes. Yeah, that's crazy. I think it's it might be quite difficult for people over this side of the pond, and maybe even not in the States, to kind of comprehend some of the things you said, because we don't really get residuals over here.
Yeah,
you know, like the movie. Yeah, the movie world is kind of like new to this like side of the world. Maybe not new, but like there's bigger productions and stuff come in, and I still don't think they get residuals. I believe that they just get buyouts. Yeah. I think residuals kind of stopped before I started dancing, so probably 2011, 2012, I feel like the residual, like I never encountered residuals until I came to LA.
Right.
And even then I'd get them and I'd be like, the sending this cost more than what I'm receiving. Like, you know, you get a check in the post for like $2. You're like, really? Yeah. Like, why don't you just add it up until it makes a lump sum and then send it to me? So yeah, we don't experience that here. But out there, you know, that's a huge part of like when you land a film or you land a big job, that's a massive pull to make you want to do the job, is that you go, oh, this is like an ongoing income.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not just that initial fee. It's not your show fee. It's that ongoing fee that you go, oh, I'm going to get some stability from this.
Yeah. Some sort of stability. Amazing.
What's the kind of rate difference normally for a dancer, if you know the answer, for like, say you do drop a rate or drop a grade, like how big of a difference is that for you to lose that?
It can mean residuals versus no residuals.
Mm.
Like none at all. Like, you know, it can mean your $250 check or your $2,000 check becomes a $250 check.
Which is huge.
$16,000 check becomes a $600 check. Like that's huge. I mean, most the hardest working dance artists that are only dance artists that, like, that's a very small category now, because everybody wants to try to teach, because teaching, it sends a signal to us that teaching, you can create your own pay, and teaching, you can keep hiking up your prices, and teaching, you can consistently work, mm-hmm. because everybody wants to learn dance, but not everybody's supposed to be a teacher. And that's unfortunately, we're in a position where we have no base infrastructure. It does not require a license to teach, any permit, any registry to teach, and go into the teaching circuit. So that's kind of where we are right now. But what was your question? Your question was about residuals, right?
Yeah.
And that scale pay of residuals, of learning to get 16,000 versus 600. Well, most of the hardest working dance artists maybe are just shy of making 100K a year. Like in my toughest year as a dance artist, aside from my teaching, I made somewhere around 90K. to 92K bracket. Mm-hmm. That was a good year.
Yeah. Like that.
Without teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Now teaching got me to pass the 100K mark, but still dance jobs alone, being one of the hardest working dance artists in the business and only making 92K.
Mm.
Going on tour with, you know, a various amount of artists that are recording artists that are A-list, and you're making below D-League, well, below D-League in the NBA, below that, like I think minor league, right? Like,
and you're in the A-League of what you're doing.
I'm in the A-list category of what I'm doing.
Mm.
So that's a problem. It's a problem that, you know, we have this serious question mark. It's a question mark. More times than none, more times than any, where we get on a job and we're like, so what is my check looking like? Mm. Like, I know my rate for the day, and I know I'm supposed to be on this job for 4 weeks, and I know I'm supposed to do 6 days a week, but then we're switching rehearsal times all the time. Some things are getting canceled and I still don't have my contract.
Mm. But we shouldn't even be in these positions without receiving a contract.
That's like, that I would say, if you were, if I was talking about like not what stuck out, but what is the general issue, the general issue is agreements, contract agreements.
So people are starting working before they've even agreed on a fee or on hours, rates, anything.
Agreed on a fee on paper. You may have agreed to a fee through word of mouth, through your agent. You may have agreed to a fee of, sometimes they'll put it's Dancers Alliance, and that will be the, okay, it's Dancers Alliance. Somebody that has not taken account to inflation and not, has got not gone past $250 a day for an 8-hour day in since they've started. Okay. So I'm working, is giving low budget, and I am this caliber of a dance artist, and I'm making the same as the newbie that just moved to this, LA.
Yeah, this is what I've said this for a long time. Like, if there was like a kind of like a grading system, so like, you know, like if you come in as a footballer, like a soccer player, and you just come from like the youth squad into the adult team, and you're playing professional, you're still playing against Manchester United, but you know, you're less experienced, you know, essentially we're not going to put all of our trust in you. You're the newbie. Like, they don't get paid the same rate as the superstar player that's been there for 10 years, unless they come, which is one out of every, what, thousand, which come out the gate, like the best 17-year-old ever. Like,
swinging.
Yeah.
Brianna Morrison, that swinging.
Yeah, and then like
swinging, like,
yeah, like then they get compensated the same. But otherwise, it's kind of like a tier system. And I, as always said, like, why don't we have like on jobs? So say it's through like in the UK, if it was like run by Dancers Network, and if there is like SAG or Dancers Alliance, whoever now is in charge, like each job would have to have like at least 2 18 A League. Like dancers, 2 B League dancers, or a percentage, and then like 4 newbies. And if you're trying to save costs, like, cool, you get your newbies. Like, but you have to have your percentages have to match. So you're covering dancers at all levels to get paid. You know, like, because we always get told like it's a production thing, it's a budget thing. Well, okay, cool. We can make this work for you and make this work for us. Like, if you can hire 10 dancers, like, let's make it a percentage thing that, you know, you hire 40 or 30% of A League dancers and then balance it out as it goes down. So it accords to your budget and the guidelines that Dancers Alliance or Network set for you.
Yeah, that actually gets my juices turning. I'm going to take that back to the bank.
It just makes sense to me.
It
like,
does.
You know, instead of going like, we're broke, let's hire loads of newbies and underpay them. And then that's the world we're in. Like,
no, I mean, honestly, and well, I thought about this too, the dictation of the caliber of that recording artist might call for, you know what I mean? Just like you as an A-list artist, you make over this bracket per year. So you can only hire A-list.
Yes.
Artist. And this is your pool to pick from.
Yeah.
If you want to take them now, or you want to take B-list, then you need to keep them on for a contracted period of this year, this amount of time. If you want to take a C-list or a D-list, you have to contract them for this amount of time.
Yeah, because it's the same as like when you have to get your SAG card, right? You can't just get your SAG card. Like, you have to do a certain amount of jobs to get it.
You have to work them for 6 months.
And then am I correct that companies who are using SAG have to hire so many SAG artists and so many non-SAG artists? Or have I made this up?
I don't know if it sticks. I don't know if that sticks. But I wouldn't be surprised. That was a rule, but it's a rule that probably nobody follows.
or nobody checks up on.
Because to be honest, I was very shocked that at Super Bowl, you know, SAG-AFTRA ended up showing up. That I definitely have to say, and it's not like a cocky thing, I definitely think that was because of me.
Oh, 100%. Because they weren't aware of what was happening beforehand.
Never. They weren't. They didn't know.
So why would they, like, they obviously weren't overseeing it, you know?
They admitted to me that they did not know. They did not know about the weekend. Mm. They learned about the weekend through my page. That was mind-blowing for me. But yeah. Yeah, definitely think that this, that's a good...
Do you worry about your future as a dance artist, considering maybe the choreographers you've highlighted for not doing things correctly or not following guidance, or, you know, just not, I guess, holding themselves to the standard that you do? Do you worry that this might affect your future with them? Because I think we're also very much on the board of, well, everyone I speak to, you know, we're all Team Taja. We're all like, she's fighting the good fight. She's doing great things. But then the only thing that I think about that's never raised is maybe how this affects you as an individual, mm-hmm. because you're fighting the cause for us and we're all patting you on the back saying good job. But then what happens to you? Like, where does that leave you? Because X, Y, and Z, they might not know that we're all patting you on the back and we still get hired, but then that puts you in a very, in a vulnerable position.
You know, what's crazy is that, somehow my spirit knew, you know, you're going to have to make a choice. Mm. If you're going to go out and do all of this, you have to be willing to walk away from the rest of your potential career working with recording artists, mm-hmm. Dancing back up, so being a supporting artist. Mm. And I'm fine with that. I had a 15-year career doing that, like nonstop. Anytime mm-hmm. I wanted a job, I had a job. Like, I was very, very blessed, very honored to be working the jobs that I did. And I'm also one of those people that, like, I only need to do things once. Like, if it satisfies me the first time, I'm good. Like, mm-hmm. moving on, you know, check the gate. Mm-hmm. For me, I just made a conscious choice. Like, after Savage and Fenty, that was a job that I was actively advocating on. And after I finished that job, I had gotten injured during that job, still dealing with that injury. But after that, I was like, this is it. This is my last rodeo drive. Like, this is it. I'm not doing powerless independent contract anymore. If I'm going to work with a recording artist, it's going to be on my terms or not at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from there, I was still getting booked for things. I was still getting asked to do things, but it was different. It had a different, I feel like there are some choreographers that don't even bother calling me now, but that's not necessarily because of the advocacy. It's because they think that I'm actually too far above doing the job.
Yeah.
Me to do like that. I've actually dealt with some things where people have put me on a veil and I like asked if I would do the job. I said, yes, I end up on the job. And they're like, I literally thought you weren't going to do this job. I thought you weren't dancing anymore. Or they would say, or I thought you didn't do these types of jobs anymore. A lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'm thinking a lot of people think that I don't do these types of jobs anymore. And then the ones that think I'm too difficult to hire, I mean, you've never hired me.
But also, so, you wouldn't be difficult if you were doing your shit right.
Yeah. I mean, and also, I'm not that person that's like flying off the handle. I'm just the person that's going to say, oh, that's not, this ain't right. Like, I'm going to tell you why it's not right. And I'm going to give you some solutions.
We both have that quality.
Yeah. I'll be like, hey, this is why it's not going to work, because, you know, we need to have this and this and this so that in the case scenario that we injure ourselves, this is how we're taken care of. And then it protects you. Mm. And I'm here to protect you and make this job better. So, you know, you hire me, you hire my brand, you hire me, you hire my standard of excellence. What I trained, how I trained, how I experienced things. You're hiring a whole artist.
Yeah, a business.
And a business. And a black owned business. You're hiring me, like as an independent. I'm not part of a troupe. I'm not, this is not a dance troupe that you're hiring. You're hiring individual contractors. Mm. I mean, yeah. I mean, like if there's a question in terms of the question of like job security, because I'm assuming that's what you mean by that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that threat to me, I'm working more than I've ever worked before. Like it is unreal how much, and on top of that, like I'm on to like new heights. I'm doing more movement direction and creative direction. I'm doing brand consulting now because of my ideas. Mm-hmm. People like my ideas. I'm doing more campaigns, you know, within the fashion world. And yeah, I mean, I'm running my corporation and putting together, you know, my first production and working as a music supervisor on my first mm-hmm. film. Like they're
that's,
amazing.
That's super dope.
Yeah. Those are really cool things. And, I feel very much, I'm okay. I feel good.
What's it like? Like, you know, all the advocacy stuff aside, what's it like being Taja Riley? Like, you know, you're from a family of entertainment. You know, your dad is Teddy Riley. Like all your sisters, are they, I don't know if they're still in the entertainment, but they, you know, they were all dancing at one point and stuff, right? They're still in.
Yeah. Deja is literally like Superwoman, Captain America. And she is doing, she's in the mirror, you know, the Lululemon, the mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
The mirror where they teach, yeah. Like she is one of them instructors in the mirror.
Oh, sick.
And he's has a major partnership with Lululemon, huge ambassador, huge brand partner. And yeah, she teaches, you know, around the States and in New York and constantly doing campaigns. Her and her husband, Jimmy, my brother-in-law, they're now like taking the couple TikTok influencer route too together. So that's really cool to watch them. They're a vibe. Mm-hmm. And my younger sister is like an accomplished like beauty guru. Mm-hmm. She has her own like online beauty school university, but she does Vivica Fox. She does, Raven Goodwin. She does Taylor Parks. Like she's doing some really powerful black faces, black and brown faces. And she's on that set of that Netflix show, which is like, you need to leave or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Comedian show. And she did prosthetics for that effects and stuff like that. So I'm very much, to my sisters, mm-hmm. I'm like the little sister, even though I'm like the middle mm-hmm. child. And then I have my half sister too that does her reality stuff. So yeah.
Do you feel like you have to be at a certain standard because of your family name? Because your name carries so much weight.
Yeah, I never thought about that really until now. When
sorry.
I started to be like, oh, I never thought about that. I just didn't now that I think about that, I'm going to go. I don't. I think because of the family that I grew up in and I was brought up in, I have this standard, but I don't think I have to do this because of the standard that my name carries, you mm-hmm. know? It's never been part of that sentence. It's usually been like the cherry on top. It's like, I'm doing all of this and, you know, I do know
yeah.
I was born into it. It wasn't like I'm just now starting. I've had actually this many years of it because this is how many years of age I am, you know?
Yeah. So. When you first broke into the dance world, you were 17, I believe, like as a working artist, right?
As a working artist, technically I was 14.
What was that like at such a young age?
I started out with like something that most competition kids that are like in that 1% mm-hmm. start with. which is assisting, you know, working as an assistant. I worked as an assistant on The Pulse, on West Coast, Dance Explosion, on NYCDA.
For Brian?
For Brian, mainly traveling around with Brian. And then, you know, Mia got a kick out of me. So she was like, I want her too. And so, so I was doing that. And I was really, really plugging in and sponging up against these greats. And I moved out to LA at 16. My dance teacher actually told me I wasn't ready. And, but I was like, I don't really have a choice. My parents said Atlanta or LA. I choose LA. I can't stand Atlanta. I got here. And the first week that I got here, I did like some charity class for Brian. And that was how I booked my first job. And from there, and that was working with Carmi Bacar. That's how I met Carmi Bacar. It's how I met Adam Lambert. It's how I met Allison Porter, Curly Sue. Curly Sue. And that's how I met Leo Moctezuma and Joel Bahandas and Randy Kemper. And I had actually known Randy Kemper before then because she was really close with Trav. But yeah, that's kind of how I got in with performance art world and also all these, you know, huge names, in the underground of the industry or the interim of the industry. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't stop, joined some dance crew, for Sir Charles, who choreographs for Yes. now. And it was called something beast. And, throughout that whole year, I was just so hungry, taking so many classes. And then what, you know, at 16, going on to 17, booked Janet, after literally having to graduate early, being forced to graduate early because of Dancing with the Stars, job with Marty Kadelka and Dee Caspary. And then like literally the month after, I got the call for Janet. And I was like, I'm in this.
Obviously you were ready for that job physically as a dancer. You were ready for that, you know, these opportunities. Yeah. Were you mentally prepared for like what was coming?
Not for the high school stuff.
No.
I wasn't prepared for that because I just had this picture of the industry of like, everybody loving on each other. I just like imagined that. Cause that's how it was going to competition for me. That was my competition experience. And maybe it was my competition experience because I was well liked because I was good. So everybody wanted to like associate with me. At my studio, it was a little bit of a high school different question. Mm-hmm. But eventually it got to a point where we were all just like very much grateful for each other and to have such a diverse camp in their home-based studio. That when I moved out here, I just thought it's a bigger pool, bigger community of love. And I got the rude awakening of what it's like to be the youngest person in the face of people that are very territorial about their work because maybe they're insecure. That was hard for me because most of those people were people that I really looked up to. So being on a job with that person, being my opposite and wanting to get to know this person. I remember I bought her earrings for her birthday and that was literally the only time she was nice to me. And it killed me because I was like, it took me to buy your friendship. And then after that, she wasn't so mean to me, but she was still like that. And it never really, I don't know if it ever really, you know, morphed for her. Like, I don't know if, you know, obviously I show respect to everybody. Got to give credit where it's due. And I'm very appreciative of the people that came before me and laid a path before me of being versatile artists. And I'm excited. I get excited, you know, about wanting to work with people. But the high school thing, I never really appreciated that aspect and that part of the character of people because I didn't go to high school.
Yeah.
So to see what happened in the movies happened to me in the community, I was like, this shit is weird.
From grown folk.
Yeah. From adults. Adulting. Like, I'm still a teenager.
You're 16.
I'm not acting like that. It was interesting. And that's, I think, too, part of our oppressive cycle is that because there's no industry business class that's like a stapled class of somebody that you can sign up and listen to, it becomes, you know, this education through experience. You're learning through other people who are still learning the ropes, and they have a certain amount of experience or skill set or opportunity to them. And then you're seeing how they handle those opportunities. And from that, you develop your learning curve. Mm-hmm. But it's all from experience. So we could be training so differently because I'm working with this person in so-and-so's camp and you're working with this person in so-and-so's camp. And because we don't really know the language of the business, this person has this experience, this person has this experience, we're learning from those people. Mm. And that's it.
So maybe that's what you do now. Maybe you teach people the business.
Right. I mean, like, that's what I'm meeting about today. That's really interesting. And it's with Bobby. I have some projects that I'm very like holding near and dear until like the white paper is executed. Mm-hmm. But trust me, it is something I'm definitely thinking about. I'm definitely going to get out and teach again. I took a hiatus from teaching for the obvious reasons of the pandemic. But then after that, when I started getting into advocacy, I was like, I don't want to just come out to teach anymore, like teach dance anymore. If you want me to come out and teach to you, you have to have me come out and speak as well.
Educate you on business, not just steps. I think that's dope. I think that's something that's definitely lacking. And that was kind of the whole reason I started this podcast was like, I remember making every mistake there is to make and being like, well, what's wrong with that? Because I had no idea. You know what I mean? And then I was really fortunate that I landed in good circles with like Cisco, Sean Niles and John Graham, et cetera, to be like, you know, you're older generation above me. What do I do? And they would advise me. But, you know, if I wasn't fortunate to have them as like close friends and mentors, like I would have had no idea. So I always think, what does the 17-year-old Kane who doesn't know these people, what would he do? He's got nowhere to go. There's no hole in the wall to go and go, what do I do if this happens? Right. You know? And even though I guess we're not answering questions directly, it's even just people being able to be a fly on the wall and hear from people's experiences and be like, I'm not going to do that. Or, oh, I could do that. You know?
Yeah. And that's also accountability. It's really big. I just had a conversation with someone that hit me up on Instagram and ran into a problem with a company that she's actively working with. And, you know, she was the choreographer as well as one of the dance artists. And because she was so excited to do this, it was her first time taking on a choreography job. She handled the agreements on behalf of the dance artists, but didn't read her agreement.
She didn't read her own?
She didn't read the agreement that she was signing on behalf of all these dance artists. And then, obviously, things go wrong, like they often do. Mm-hmm. And she was like, basically help, SOS. I got on the phone with her, was like, okay, you got to lay out A, B, C, D, E, F, G to me. You have to tell me everything what I'm fully looking at. And at first it was like more bias. And she'd be like, they did this and they had me waiting for this many hours and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, that's wonderful and all, or not wonderful and all, but I needed to know the actual facts. How did this gig start? Do you have a contract? She said, yes, I have a contract. I'm like, what does it say in your contract about transportation? She said, we're promised this, this, and this, and this, and this. And I was like, can you send me a copy of your contract? And I'm reading the contract and it doesn't even address people appropriately. I was like, who put this contract together? She's like, I did. And I was like, oh, you did. And I was like, okay, so I'm reading it and it says you in the contract. It says you, it says at the beginning that this person is referred to as a client. This person is referred to as the company, whatever. And you're reading the contract and I'm like, I don't see client anywhere in here. It says you. And she's like, well, I created the contract and then they added more and revised the contract. I was like, did you read this in this entire contract? And did you take this to a legal counsel? Did you counsel up? And she was like, well, no. And I was like, okay. And so the dance artists, do they have a contract? Did they sign this same contract? And she was like, no, I was the only one that signed a contract. I was like, you mean to tell me they don't have a contract? I was like, well, now you're in a position where you drop the ball so hard that you either have to fall on the sword, hope to God that they will cooperate with you. But if they don't, and you want to decide you don't want any of your dance artists to perform, or you want to decide that you're not going to perform, you're going to owe them.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if they breach, cool. They breached, but they don't owe any of these dance artists anything. And again, they try. Things happen. And it says in the contract, if they try and things happen, that they're not liable because they put those clauses in there.
Mm.
It gets canceled, suspended, but all of these things. Like, and those are the problems that we often run into. We're not doing our due diligence. Mm. Even you do a job and you get stuck in a job and you have a problem, people are not counseling at all upward. Mm. At all. They're, I have a problem on a job. I go to Brian Friedman, would know how to do this, work out this situation. Nobody's doing that. Mm. But then they want to say, you know, Brian Friedman is my teacher or my dad in the industry, my father figure. This person's my father figure. This person's my father figure. But when they run into trouble, they're not counseling up with these people. Mm. And it's not because, you know, they wouldn't want to. It's just they don't know that that is a principle of the business.
But even surely they would go to just their agent.
They wouldn't do that either because people run their relationship with their agent or conduct their relationship with their agent as if their agent controls them.
Yeah, which I don't get at all. Because like I was with Block, like when I was out there, and like I never ever felt that. Like I don't know if it was just maybe this like that with other clients, but I never felt like that there's something wrong. I call Lainey, I'd be like, blah, 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 what do I do? And she'd go, let's not panic. Let's weigh up the pros and cons of every situation. Like even when it's good things, like, oh, I've got three jobs all on the same day that are being offered. Help me decide. Well, this one's more money. This one's, you're going to find more benefit from. This one's going to, you know, be more opportunities. You know, ideally the more money one for now would be great for us all. But what do you want to do? Weigh up pros and cons. Like it never felt like they had to guide me or tell me. It was like a relationship.
Right. And we grew up in that generation though, when we were still understanding the principle of what it means to have an agent or have a manager.
Mm.
And now we're at a space where, you know, people do as they're told to do. So if they're told to get a headshot, get a resume, and sign to an agency, that's what they're going to do.
Well, but people think that's the magic formula to making it. That's why.
That's the purpose behind it. But like, if you were to ask people 9 times out of 10, what does an agent do?
They couldn't tell you. They couldn't tell you. They're the delivery person. They're the Royal Mail. They're to make sure I get from my house to their to the shop or vice versa safely, intact, with no rules broken. They should be overseeing, you know, not appointing.
Yeah. They treat agencies like emergency contact, but it's like the emergency contact of like a list or a contract that like you never really utilize. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, like that's my point of contact so I can sign this contract. It's not really this is my lifeline. This is my trusted, you know, colleague. Cause I feel when I got signed, my relationship was, I was going to their cookouts. I was, you know, at carnival, sitting at their tables. I was coming and visiting them and hula hooping in the office. Everybody knows at Clear Talent Group, everybody knows that when Tasha comes into the office, Tasha visits the office at least once a month. And when she comes into the office, she likes to hula hoop. Like on my first tour, when I booked my first tour, they had a hula hoop sent to the rehearsal space.
Epic.
That's how deeply connected I was with my agents, how in tune they were with me and my personality. And the relationships have changed a little bit now because it's more been, do you want me to take this job for you? Do you not want me to take this job for you? But bringing me work, like the motivation behind agents bringing dance artists work, that's gotten a little slow to my knowledge. I don't know if it's, you know, I'm an old fart and or they see that I'm difficult or whatever, but again, like, you know, whether it's they're not proud of me or they are proud of me and they just don't know how to utilize me and they're not talking to me, it's more so a pretty lax job to be an agent now. And we got to change that if we want to change things here, because it's gotten lax to be a dance artist now. Either people have given up or, you know, they're fed up with it, or they don't know, or they know and they're complacent. And I'm not seeing enough people in those jobs to be like curious and to question some of these boundaries, these fake boundaries that we put up, these fake walls that we put up when it comes to our agents, when it comes to wage transparency, when it comes to the camaraderie between a recording artist and a dance artist, that gap, you know. I've been, you know, accustomed to working with recording artists that close that gap and actually are associating with the artist collaborators that they work with. Unfortunately, that's not always the case or the story or the point. But yeah, I think the language for business and dance should be synonymous, and it's not, you know.
For sure. It's definitely something that needs teaching and refining and fine tuning and sharing, you know, play the violins. And get them out, yo. Well, you have another meeting in 5 minutes with, I'm assuming, Bobby Newbury. So tell him thank you.
No, I have lunch with Bobby, but I am actually about to get on the phone with Jerry Brown from Dance Equity Association, so we can talk more about the language of the business becoming synonymous. So yes, it's still within the vein, but I'm just very appreciative of what you're doing, because you're also giving kind of like that industry business class. And I want to share that, you know, if you haven't, if you just tuned into Ins and Outs podcast just to see me on here, thank you, first of all. But you should continue plugging in and go watch some earlier episodes, tune in, because there's really education that's happening on this platform that's not happening on other platforms, other dance platforms. Like, I get it, the life and times, the database of having, you know, a dance artist on a show and speaking about their gigs and their life and stuff like that. But beyond that, I think that Kane is so brilliant. You are so brilliant. And you've been able to close that gap a little bit more with not just bringing the dance artists on here for their documentation of the craft of what they do, but really diving deeper into their psyche and the mentality behind what it is that they do. Mm. And that also kind of sharpens that segue into the education for the arts and the how-tos and the do-nots and the do's and the nuts and the bolts. And that's something that we need right now in the industry. We desire it. Even if we don't know we desire it, we need that. And so, yeah, definitely keep plugging into the Ins and Outs podcast. I don't know if you do it. You hear it first.
We don't, but we can. You can do it.
You heard it first. Okay.
Thank you. That was very, very lovely words. And it means a lot, especially coming from you.
Of course.
Well, I'll let you bounce. Thank you so much for your time, your wisdom, your knowledge. I love you, Dealey. You're a great human. And please come to the UK soon.
Yeah, we're working on it. My team is working on it, closing some other things, but I'll keep you updated, and we need to do this in person.
Yes, we can do business and pleasure. We can drink and do this at the same time. Say what? Bless. I love you, Dealey.
Love you too.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.